As long as the material body exists, one has to meet the demands of the body, namely, eating, sleeping, defending, and mating. But a person who is in pure bhakti yoga or in Krishna consciousness does not arouse the senses while meeting the demands of the body. Rather, he accepts the bare necessities of life, making the best use of a bad bargain, and enjoys transcendental happiness in Krishna consciousness. He is callous towards incidental occurrences such as accidents, disease, scarcity, and even the death of a most dear relative. But he is always alert to execute his duties in Krishna consciousness or bhakti yoga. Accidents never deviate him from his duty. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 2.14, Agama payino nityastyam nityastams titikshva bharata. He endures all such incidental occurrences because he knows that they come and go and do not affect his duties. In this way he achieves the highest perfection in yoga practice. In the stage of perfection called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities. By practice of yoga, this perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness, realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulty. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. Is actually very refreshing. When I read it first, I thought, wow, boundless transcendental happiness. It's nice to hear some of that after you hear about all the miseries of the material world. It's really, really nice to actually hear something happy and something boundless. Because we're all generally bound by our limitations and restrictions in the material world. So hearing about something that is boundless, something that is transcendental, and something that is happy or joyous, it's such a change from hearing about the regular fallacies of material existence and limitations that normally, we can see these limitations from day to day. But here Prabhupada is mentioning in his translation and purport that there are various methods to attaining this type of so-called happiness. And he looks at the monist's idea of so-called happiness. And in about the second stanza, Prabhupada is speaking about this theory of oneness that the monists have. And that they are so afraid, and out of fear of jeopardizing their theory of oneness, they deny even the pleasure that's available from the yoga, from executing yoga, even in the Patanjali system. Monists even deny that type of pleasure. In various systems of yoga, there is various amounts of pleasure, obviously. But here Prabhupada is saying that even this little bit of pleasure, they do not accept it. They can't, because it jeopardizes them that, oh, you have feelings, and you are a separate person, and you are enjoying something. Put into this realm of monistic thought. That's just mine. Whereas the Muni who writes these particular sutras, Patanjali, he declares that there is an acceptance of transcendental pleasure, that these asanas that are specifically recommended by him that they are meant to facilitate something higher. They are meant to facilitate a transcendental awareness and pleasure. But even that, monists are now trying to say, okay, not really, we don't accept it. The Prabhupada is saying thereafter that whether or not you accept the pleasure potency, it exists. He's talking about the chit shakti, or internal potency, which is transcendental. So it's like, even if someone says, I don't agree with the law of gravity. Alright, just because you don't agree with the law of gravity doesn't mean we find you floating around Earth. You know? This is a law of material nature, and it's infallible. So whether you believe it or you choose to deny its existence, it will still act. You're still standing on the ground, whether or not you are even aware of the theory of gravity, or Newton's laws, or physics, any of these intricate laws. Whether you know of them, or whether you know of them and choose to deny them, they still act, because these are infallible laws of nature. And, you know, there's nothing that messes up with that system, because it's designed by someone who has designed it so, to work in proper accordance. So just like this, the internal potency of the Lord, whether we choose to deny it, or whether we choose to follow it respectfully, or try to achieve it by some of the processes that Prabhupada is mentioning in his purport, you know, the chit-shakti remains there. It's an internal pleasure potency of Krishna, which is transcendental. Very different from the pleasures of this world, which are fleeting and don't really last very long. They may satisfy you to a small extent. With this kind of chit shakti, or internal potency of the Lord, it's described that even a single drop of this type of magnanimous ocean-like love and bliss is enough to satisfy him, even a little tiny speck of a drop. So can you imagine what this type of potency is like? It's kind of difficult for us because, I mean, our frame of reference is everything that's so limited in the material world. But we still have this innate desire in us to find something that's, you know, a bit longer than the fleeting pleasure of this world. And it's because our spirit soul is Satchit Ananda. Ananda. It's blissful by nature. It's our constitutional position to be happy. So it's only normal that we would look for something, you know, to keep us in that state. But it's not possible to necessarily be in that state if one is not on the transcendental platform in the material world. In the spiritual world, it's effortless, it's easy. Are already in that state. But in the material world, it's a little more difficult, and we have to work at it. It's difficult, but it's not impossible. That's the point. This is a very high and elevated state, but we shouldn't be discouraged that, oh my god, it's so high, but it's out of my reach. No, it's something that would be worth your effort, would be worth your endeavor in the bhakti yoga process. Definitely something that is described as boundless transcendental happiness. So our work would be put in into creating these transcendental senses. It's not that we have to create it out of nothing. Our senses are already here. But the point is that our senses have become dulled by contact with material nature. So they're not in their sharp, in their sharpest form. We sort of need to work on them and get them back to their original form, which is the transcendental form. So through these transcendental senses, we can realize this transcendental happiness. Prabhupada is giving us this kind of formula. And even though this material world is sometimes a terrible place, really terrible. I mean, there are events that really can shake one up. Shake up your faith, shake up spiritual life, your material life, some things that can get people thinking. But Prabhupada says that even in such a position, being situated, when you're in this transcendental position, one is never shaken even in the midst of the greatest difficulty. Senses are awakened, we're in this transcendental bliss, and then from that state, the person, the soul, he never actually, he's never really stirred or shaken to such a degree where he then suffers inexplicably. Some people really, really, they suffer so much internally, maybe not externally. We look at them and we think, wow, they're leading such awesome lives, you know, materially they have it all, and outwardly they have it all. But suffering is something that even though you may have all, I mean, look, one example that I could think of this is many of our great celebrities from the West, like actors, actresses, rock stars, many of them have fame, glory, money, prestige. They have great contracts with big companies that smaller musicians could even dream of. You know, but what they wouldn't do for that type of a position. But then you find people who commit suicide. Or who drink themselves to death. Or die of drug overdoses. You know? If that were the case, that if all the material necessities of life were met, and then you would be happy, why is it then that all these people who are seemingly successful aren't exactly happy? Why is it that our favorite rock stars, for example, end up committing suicide or, you know, drinking themselves to death? Various reasons, I'm sure, but I mean, that's the point. Even though one may be very well materially situated, he could be suffering like a person in hell. We wouldn't know, because it's not necessarily, suffering is just not an external symptom only. That's the point. And on the same note, on the reverse, happiness is not necessarily just external. Happiness is also an internal state. And this is the internal state that Srila Prabhupada is actually talking about towards end of his purport, towards end of his translation. In this internal state, one is never shaken, even in the midst of the greatest difficulty. So whether this greatest difficulty is external, I think that's what he's saying, but even in the midst of the greatest difficulty, this internal position is one where someone, having been established, is not shaken from. I mean, he's very solid, he's very well situated in this type of transcendental happiness. So when we achieve that type of platform, even though the world could be burning down around us, and our attempts to save it may help in some way, but some things are out of our hands. We have a very limited sphere of control. Of all the turmoil that's experienced on earth, someone who is situated on the transcendental platform, in this state of transcendental happiness, he's not so agitated to a degree where he suffers in that condition anymore. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. So as I was saying before, we hear so much of this negativity and all the atrocities of the material world. Everything that happens on a day-to-day basis, week-to-week, month-to-month, year-to-year, or war from war. It's huge. scale sort of just increases along the way, and is to be expected because, as Bhagavatam tells us, this is Kali Yuga. And it's just going to get progressively or degressively worse. But the good part about this heavy age of Kali Yuga is that we have a process which is not, how to say, not the most difficult to perform, but can give you still the highest results. And this type of boundless joy and transcendental happiness, which is the real craving of the soul. And I guess we're familiar with the process and the cultivation of Bhakti Yoga, which means performing devotional service. And Prabhupada mentions here how devotional service of Bhakti Yoga will be vividly described in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which is the next chapter, and we'll be coming to that. Sort of focused on the original eternal position of the living entity, which is Satchit Ananda, and how a person can actually be so happy in this position of Krishna consciousness that he doesn't aspire after any other happiness. You know, if someone is internally satisfied, they don't need very much. You know, they would be happy in whatever position they are in. And it doesn't mean that one has to necessarily abstain from, you know, being in a comfortable position. But Prabhupada also says that we don't do these four basic things of life to gratify our senses. We do them to meet our bodily demands. So yeah, we're human beings. We live in society, and you know, we're part of society in the sense that we fulfill our bodily needs in a way that even maintaining ourselves is seen as devotional service to Krishna. This is the principle of Yukta Vairagya, where everything that we have should be used in the service of Krishna. And that actually helps us to attain our transcendental happiness. Okay, so that was my story. Usually, what I generally read as the not just on a theoretical platform. That was my point about following a system. And we understand that that's the highest goal in order to receive, to reach the transcendental platform. But it's not necessarily so easily attainable. But that shouldn't deter us either, because we're all going through our different phases of suffering. Because we live in a place of suffering. We live in Devi Dham. This is her domain. And if we think that we can alleviate all types of suffering, I don't know if that's possible. Because Prabhupada is even saying here, in the midst of greatest difficulty, he isn't saying that the difficulty is going to stop. The difficulty will be there. Because this is a place of difficulty. But I think it's more the consciousness that changes and that helps us through it. And yeah, suffering is on many different levels. And that's what I was trying to explain by the different analogies of our rock stars and actors who may seem like they're not in a position of suffering. You know, they haven't been hit by some tornado. Or they're not suffering in Somalia, in some autonomous country. They're not in a poverty-stricken position. So it might not seem like they're in a position of suffering. Prabhupada also makes this point that food for life is not necessarily just giving someone a meal. Food for life is actually giving someone food, sustenance. Of course, yes, we feed the hungry also. Giving someone the rasa of life, or the truth behind their existence. But I have no idea if that is going in any direction or not.
Last night.
doesn't have emotions. Even his wife, a mother and a son, that bond is really strong. So you can imagine the emotional sentiments of a mother. And it's not like they didn't have emotions. These characters in Chaitanya Charitamrita, they their emotions are described in great detail. To experience on such a high level and then to be able to withdraw that's definitely some kind of shakti, some kind of power, some control that has been built up. So our process is generally trying to help us train our minds, because the mind is the tool that helps us, and it's also described as either our best friend or our greatest enemy. So many times there are many different types of kleshas or sufferings that are external, but sometimes the greatest suffering comes from the mind. It's actually in disturbed, concocted material states of the mind. And Prabhupada is actually speaking here that in the stage of perfection called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. So actually what is being spoken of here is control of the mind and the sufferings that the mind gives to us. That's how I think. Okay.
Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna.